Wolfram Schluter eased his car into the parking spot near the refurbished manufacturing plant in downtown Vienna. The building had originally housed a munitions plant during World War I, then again in World War II. In between, it had produced canned goods. 12 years ago, it had become a club. 3 years ago, without his grandmother's knowledge, Schluter had bought a major share in the place and used it to run his designer drug business. He'd renamed it Club Ripper. Two men immediately stepped out of the security office overlooking the parking area. They were there to keep the riffraff moving along and to provide security for the club's guests. However, whenever Schluter was parked at the club, their job was to protect his car.
Good evening, Baron Schluter.
Good evening.
The building's exterior was grim and foreboding, covered in soot and grease left there over tumultuous decades filled with anxious workers. Desperation seemed to have eaten into the bricks that made up the building. Schluter felt it every time he went there, but he didn't let it bother him. He sustained himself by feeding on the misery and addictions of others. The two doormen stood a little straighter as he walked through the entrance. Schluter nodded and never broke stride. After passing through the foyer, he stepped into the main entertainment area. The dance floor was huge, packed with Vienna's youth. Bars on both sides of the room served an endless array of alcoholic beverages. On the stage at the far end of the room, a DJ hunched behind a massive stack of speakers, turntables, and synthesizers. Three women on the stage wore leather and lace, looking provocative under the swirling light. The bad mood that had settled on him when he met Garin Braden clung to Schluter as he made his way around the perimeter of the dance floor. Two security men fell into step ahead of him and bulled through the crowd, leaving disgruntled clubgoers in their wake. Schluter ignored them. In the end, they didn't matter. The club turned a profit, but it was modest. What really drove Schluter's finances was the drug trade. Behind the bar on the right, Schluter went up to the offices on the second floor. A narrow balcony stuck out over the dance floor, offering a splendid view of the operation. The security cameras that constantly swept the dance area stripped away the shadows. Schluter settled back to wait, his mind filled with dark thoughts about his grandmother and Garin Braden. Garin stood in the snow a few blocks from Club Ripper. He ignored the cold, covered from neck to calf in a luxurious coat.
Hello?
Mr. Braden?
Yes?
We're coming for you now, sir.
Do you know where I am?
Of course, sir. Look to your left.
Garin did, and watched as a cargo truck rounded the corner and came toward him.
We're in the truck, sir.
Garin shoved his phone into his pocket and waited as the truck slowed to a crawl. A side door opened, temporarily revealing an interior that looked as if it could launch a NASA shuttle.
Mr. Braden?
A young man in a black turtleneck and black slacks stood in the center of the cargo space. A half dozen techs sat at computer workstations around him. The young man had round-lensed glasses and a goatee. He smiled, but Garin couldn't tell if the effort was an honest one or just for show. He wore a headset with a small mouthpiece at his cheek.
I'm Gunther Selfiger. Please, call me Gunther.
All right, Gunther.
Garin looked at the monitors on the walls. All of them showed exterior and interior shots of Club Ripper.
You have the whole club wired?
We do, sir. We are the most sophisticated and successful surveillance business in the country, Herr Braden.
I know. That's why I bought the company.
Of course, sir.
Where's Schluter?
Here.
Gunther pointed immediately to the widescreen monitor that sat at the center of the display. It changed perspectives and showed the interior of an office. Wolfram Schluter sat at the desk, looking bored and restless.
You've already received the background on the club, sir?
Yes, thank you. Have you got any financials on Schluter's drug business?
He's deriving extra income from the sideline, but it's only enough to keep the club operational and make some pocket cash. It's not enough to support his present lifestyle.
So he's still largely dependent on his grandmother's money?
Yes, sir.
Have you got his supply network mapped?
Give us another couple of days, sir, and we'll get it all for you.
Good.
Garin didn't know the time frames or the scope of his involvement there yet. The men had been working on the surveillance job less than 24 hours.
Hold on, sir. It appears we have something interesting going on.
Immediately, the main screen changed again. This time, it showed two men dragging a canvas bag from the back of a sedan. When the bag hit the ground, something inside it moved.
Herr Schluter, I'm afraid I have some bad news, sir.
It took Schluter a moment to recognize the man's voice, then remember that he'd sent him to watch the developments that took place regarding the woman, Anya Creed.
What?
Dieter Humbrecht and his men have been taken into police custody.
What happened?
They tried to apprehend the target, but she was able to overpower them.
One woman?
Yes, sir.
Schluter thought about that. Dieter knew a lot about him. They'd been working together for almost 4 years. Doubtless, the New York Police Department knew that Dieter and his people were responsible for the death of Mario Fellini. Schluter wasn't certain if the Americans could indict him and have him brought to their country to stand trial, but it would all be extremely embarrassing one way or another. On top of that, there was the Viking treasure to find. He was certain, the last time he'd been to Riga, that he was getting closer to it. In spite of their friendship, there was only one thing to do.
Get someone inside the holding cell. Pay someone inside off. Do whatever you have to do. I want Dieter and his people out of the way.
Yes, sir.
What is it now?
Bernd Schluter, we have your package.
Schluter glanced at the monitors displaying the parking area outside the building. He spotted the men dragging the canvas bag. At least someone was about to have a worse night than he was. The grave was in a small cemetery behind the house. Irena's grandmother was the last to have her bones laid there, and few spaces remained. Moonlight shone through the wispy clouds. A crooked picket fence, missing a few slats, surrounded the graveyard and set it apart from the forest that threatened to encroach and devour it. Numb from the cold, the adrenaline, and vodka, Irena walked to her grandmother's grave and knelt there, wiping tears from her cheeks with the back of her arm. Lifting the bottle of liquor to her lips, she tried to take another drink, but discovered it was empty. She'd consumed all of it on her way up the hill. It was the most she'd drunk in years. She was confused. She didn't know if she was crying for Mario, her grandmother, or herself. The last thought was the most upsetting. Irena couldn't remember a time when she'd cried for herself. Not that she shed many tears for others, either.
Oh, Misha. I wish you were here.
Irena reached and ran her fingers over the carved headstone.
I've always been told it's all right to talk to the dead, but when you start waiting for them to answer, you've gone over the edge.
Irena spun around, reaching for the pistol that she'd habitually carried for the past few years, before realizing it was still packed away with the other personal belongings she'd kept from Mario's sight. A tall, thick man stood at the graveyard's entrance. He had a broad face and his skin was ruddy.
Dalton?
Irena.
It was Dalton Hyde. For years, they'd been sometime business associates and lovers, dropping into and out of deals that had benefited both of them.
Where did you come from?
I was in the tavern when you went in there looking for trouble.
The man's big face split in a wide grin. He was Hungarian by birth, but he'd lived all over Eastern Europe while he plied his trade. He was one of the most gifted artists Irena had ever seen, but he didn't have an honest bone in his body and had an attraction to easy money, usually someone else's. Normally, he was a confidence man, arranging for investors to buy fake art or antiquities he'd crafted himself or had others create. He was also a thief. He knew electronics, hardware, and systems, and was considered a sophisticated hacker. He'd taught Irena everything she knew about breaking and entering.
What are you doing here?
I came to talk to you about a possible job.
I'm not interested.
I don't think this is the appropriate time to talk about it.
Why?
Because, my dear girl, you are schnockered.
I won't be interested later either.
What you won't be later is drunk. We'll talk then.
Go away.
Is that any way to treat an old friend?
I've got an excuse. I'm drunk.
You're not that drunk.
Irena turned toward the house, but suddenly slipped on a patch of ice and nearly fell. Head spinning and feeling sick, she grabbed hold of the picket fence.
Okay, maybe you are that drunk.
Irena was so drunk that she was barely aware when Hyde picked her up in his massive arms and carried her to her house. Sleep would come before she even reached her bed. Garin watched as the men carried their squirming package through the club's doors, across the dance floor, then up the staircase to the offices. Gunther's cameras changed smoothly, rolling through the views until he could see inside the office where Schluter sat looking as if nothing was out of place. The men spoke briefly.
Can we get audio on this?
No, unfortunately. We didn't have the opportunity to accomplish that. The staff of the club watches the day-to-day operations pretty closely.
Garin accepted that, watching the monitor as the men unzipped the sack and emptied the contents onto the floor. A man, bound hand and foot with his mouth covered with duct tape, spilled out of the bag. He was young and wide-eyed with terror. The computer monitor tightened up on the scared man's face, then froze. Another window opened up on the screen, and headshots started cycling through.
Perhaps we'll find out who he is in a moment.
As Garin watched, two of the men in the room grabbed the helpless individual by the elbows. Schluter walked to the rear of the room and pressed a hidden switch to reveal a sliding panel in the wall.
It's a hidden passageway. We found it when we examined the blueprints. There's a room under the building.
Schluter stepped into the open doorway. The men, half carrying the prisoner between them, followed.
Do we have video down there?
That was a tricky one, but yes. We couldn't go in through the office, so we ended up tapping the room through the ceiling conduits. As it turns out, the hidden room also has electricity. We tapped in through that.
Rogue Angel is continued on the next CD.